Good afternoon and welcome back to Our Savior's Radio Online. This is Pastor Eric Jelinek. I thank you for joining us once again. I am here once again this week with Pastor Jennifer. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
We hope you enjoyed last week with Chrissy and Amy. It seems like they had some fun. We listened in as well. It was a good time. Later on this summer, we're going to have some other people that will jump in and help out too when we're gone. So we look forward to that. But today we are going back to where we ended 2 weeks ago. And if you remember 2 weeks ago when we were going through this, we were looking at the end of Jesus' ministry, the end of his life, basically leading forward to his death and his resurrection. And we'd just gotten to the part where he had been flogged and beaten and was about to be led off to be crucified. Now, one of the things with this, as we start looking through it, we're mainly going to be looking at the Synoptic Gospels, mainly looking at Matthew, Mark, and Luke. We're not going to be looking at what happens in John. We'll talk about that at another time. A lot of our focus will probably be coming through Luke, but we will be jumping in to Matthew and Mark as well, at least a little bit. And the reason I bring that up is all of them are a little bit different. There are some things that take place in Matthew that don't happen in Luke and so forth. And so when you're reading through this on your own, remember that there are some things that are a little bit different. It's different parts of the story were recorded in different places. And so that's why we're going to be looking at it that way. But today we're looking at Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Mainly focusing on Luke, probably starting about a quarter of the way into the 23rd chapter or so. Having said that, I will turn it over to you.
So last we heard the crowds had shouted, "Crucify him, crucify him," and Jesus was led away to be crucified. And the different Gospels have different accounts of what happens. Matthew talks a little bit about the soldiers mocking Jesus and putting a scarlet robe on him, as well as a crown of thorns, and "Hail, King of the Jews," and, you know, mocking what other people had declared Jesus was, that Jesus was the King of the Jews, and so they're making a joke of it before he's led to be crucified. After that point, that's not in Luke at that place at least, but in Luke, right after he is condemned to death, they lead him away to be crucified. And apparently a part of the punishment for those who were going to be executed was that they needed to carry their cross. And I think all of us have an image of what a cross looks like or would maybe look like in that time. And we're not sure really how accurate that is. You know, that it would maybe look like a lowercase T. We think that likely they had the posts already in the ground where the crucifixions took place, and if anything, those who were crucified would be carrying the crossbeam. But still, a piece of wood that would be large enough to hold a full-grown man being crucified would be incredibly heavy.
Especially after he had just been flogged.
Well, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, on his best day, that would be a hard thing. And, you know, he's
This is not his best day.
No. And so there are accounts of Jesus trying to carry it and falling down, and that's kind of a part of the Catholic tradition and the different steps to the cross, how many times Jesus fell on his way. But then we hear about a man who we've not heard of before, named Simon of Cyrene, he's just coming in from the country, and all of a sudden one of the soldiers grabs him and says, "Here, you carry the cross." And so they laid the cross on Simon, and he carries it to Calvary for Jesus to be crucified. This is one of the details that is different in these Gospels as opposed to John, but we'll talk about that maybe next week.
And as he's carrying it in, this march that he's taking, as Pastor Jennifer was just saying, there are different things that take place along it. And it's interesting as you read through Luke's Gospel that Jesus also speaks as he's making this march. I mean, there's this one time that he looks over and there are some who are following him. There are women who are wailing, excuse me, because of the loss that is going on and everything that's happening. He turns and says, "Daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children, for the days are surely coming when they will say, 'Blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bore, and the breasts that never nursed.' Then they will begin to say to the mountains, 'Fall on us,' and the hills, 'Cover us.' For if they do this when the wood is green, what will happen when it is dry? Basically, Jesus is saying that there are going to be some difficult times that are coming ahead. And with this, there will be some consequences for the actions that have taken place, especially for those who helped to lead this crucifixion march as it is. And so he does speak to those. He tries to give them a word of comfort, but he also gives sort of a prediction, a prophecy of what might be coming in the future.
So before Jesus is crucified, in a couple of the Gospels, he's offered some sour wine on a stick. And, it depends what Gospel you're looking at. But they offered him wine to drink mixed with gall. This is in Matthew. But when he tasted it, he would not drink it. And there's other accounts of Jesus being offered wine or sour vinegar on the cross or before the cross. And when Jesus is crucified, over his head they put basically the charges, which for other people would be, you know, treason or murder or something. And his crime was, this is Jesus, the King of the Jews. And so everybody could see what he was being crucified for, and they would say he's being crucified for blasphemy or insurrection or something like that. But Jesus is not crucified alone. He's in the center, and there are two bandits, as it says, who are crucified on either side of him. And we don't know exactly what they were being crucified for. But depending on the gospel that you're talking about, they're crucified next to him, and in some gospels they taunt Jesus, just like some of the crowds are taunting Jesus and saying, "Hey, if you're the Son of God, come down from the cross." And other ones, one of them is more sympathetic to Jesus.
That's Luke.
Go ahead.
In Luke, one of the criminals is deriding him, is doing the same thing as the crowds are. But the other one turns to the first criminal and basically says, "Do you not fear God? Because you're under the same sentence of condemnation. And we indeed have been condemned justly, for we're getting what we deserve for our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong." So he's up there, and as he's being crucified, he is putting the other criminal in his place, saying, "We did the wrong thing. We're being crucified for what we did, which is a just punishment. But this man, nothing has he done wrong." And yet he is being crucified. He then turns back to Jesus and says, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus says, "Truly, I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." So you have this moment of grace that takes place on the cross as well, with Jesus welcoming in this criminal into his kingdom as well.
Crucifixion is a horrible way to die. I think many people think that the worst part of crucifixion is the nails being hammered into your likely wrists and ankles, not so much middle of your hands and feet, just because those areas wouldn't support the weight of a full-grown person.
Your hands would just rip right through the nails.
Right, exactly. So they believe that it's more your wrists and ankles and perhaps just one nail through the ankles kind of twisted together. And so you'd think that bleeding would be the way that someone crucified would die. But in fact, it was usually suffocation, because as the nails are pulling your body weight down, it's harder and harder for the person to breathe. And so it was a very slow way to die, incredibly painful, but also very slow, that the only way to get a breath would be to kind of pull up on the nails to take a big breath before you kind of let go and hang down.
To help move that diaphragm and move the air around. And there are times that this could take days for a crucifixion. And that it was one of those that was a long-term type of death. It was also a public sign for people to see that these people did wrong, and that's why they're going to be suffering for such a long period of time.
Right. And keep in mind kind of the timeline of when this is happening. The night before was the feast night of Passover, when they had the Passover meal, and Jesus was arrested that night. This is that Friday, and of course, Friday evening begins the Sabbath. So it's a day that they couldn't be working. They shouldn't be, you know, people shouldn't be out watching the crucifixion. They didn't really want to be worrying about what was happening with those who were crucified. And it was in the middle of the Passover celebration. And so they were very concerned about kind of the timeline of, you know, hopefully Jesus would die quickly so that they could just be done with this and move on. If you've ever been to worship on Good Friday, you've maybe heard of the seven last words of Christ. And if you're looking through the four Gospels, you'll see that Jesus has a number of things to say while he is hanging from the cross. And those things are documented, and we often pay attention to them on Good Friday. And so when you hear the seven last words, you won't ever hear them in any one Gospel. All the Gospels have different things that Jesus says from the cross. In one of them, well, I think in John he has the most. I think there's like three of them in John.
Right, I think you're right.
But in Matthew, one of his last words is, my God, why have you forsaken me? That's the last thing he says there. In Mark's gospel, same thing. My God, why have you forsaken me? And in Luke, it's a little bit different. Sorry, I lost my place.
Verse 46. Mm-hmm.
Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. And so just, I think it's important in history, that important enough that people would write down what someone's last words are. You know, you assume that they'll have words of wisdom or something to pass on to the next generation. And so what Jesus' last words are, though they differ throughout the Gospels, are still incredibly important. They show who Jesus was. In the first two Gospels I mentioned, they showed just the despair and the pain that Jesus was going through, that he was God's son, but this was no walk in the park. His death was very real and very painful and felt like a great betrayal, and it felt like God had forsaken him. And I think it makes Jesus much more relatable to the rest of us, because who hasn't had times like that when we've felt that God has forsaken us, that we're just hanging there alone? You know, we are walking through life alone, without God, without anybody else.
I think this is very important too, because it shows the humanity side of Jesus. I mean, we look at Jesus, and yes, we do say he is truly human and truly divine, fully human, fully God. But there are times like this that we really start to grasp onto that fully human side, because he is going through something that all humans will go through, going through pain, going through suffering, and even about to go through death. And so this part, like you said, is extremely relatable, and I think that's the power of it, because God is going through these things just like we have or we will.
Right. So Jesus dies in just 3 hours, we're told, though the timeline is slightly different depending on what gospel you look at. One says he was crucified at 9 and died by noon. Another says that he was crucified at noon and died by 3. Doesn't really matter. We're not quite sure why they have the different accounts, but basically Jesus died very quickly. And after he died, it's not yet Sabbath, but they need to deal with his body quickly because the Sabbath is coming. And so there's a man named Joseph of Arimathea who has a tomb that hasn't been used yet, and so he volunteers. He goes to Pilate. He is a man of some influence, so he can have an audience with Pilate. And he asks to take down the body of Jesus so that he can lay it in his tomb. And Pilate allows him to do that. So they wrap up his body as quickly as they can, before sundown happens, and they lay him in Joseph's tomb.
And then, as it says at the end of verse or chapter 23, on the Sabbath day they rested according to their customs. And so this was a big part, that this all took place before that Sabbath day started, because as Pastor Jennifer was talking about earlier, nothing was supposed to happen on that day, not even the observing of death, not moving of his body, any of that. And so that was important that it took place then.
Right. In Mark's gospel, it's a little bit more specific, which is kind of rare because Mark is usually a little bit scant on details. But Joseph went to Pilate. Pilate asked the centurion if he was dead. He said, yes, he had been dead for quite a while. And it says Joseph bought a linen cloth, wrapped it in the linen cloth, laid it in the tomb, and then talks about the stone being rolled against the door of the tomb. And it says Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Joseph, saw where the body was laid. So even in his death, Jesus still had people watching over him. Not necessarily his 12 disciples, of course, but most of the accounts talk about...
Especially in Mark's gospel, the 12th.
Well, yeah, I mean, they are running somewhere in the next country, it seems. But the women who have been watching at a distance are still there with Jesus even after he's died to make sure that his body is cared for as well as it can be before sundown, and they have to be at home.
And that's really significant that the women are watching, because the women then are the ones who really jump into the picture a lot more as we look forward to the resurrection, because they know where the body is. They know that there's some stuff that has to take place with the body yet for an anointing and so forth for the burial. And so they have to wait through their Sabbath day. They do that. And then on the first day of the week, they, as soon as it's daybreak, start to head out. Oh.
Maybe we want to save that. We forgot your favorite part. What happens
I know,
after?
I know. I didn't know if you're going to go there or
let's
not.
Let's save that other stuff for next time.
All right, we'll look at that next time. But all right, one of my favorite parts, and this, I'm going to go back to Mark's gospel for this, because Mark's gospel is one of my favorites, as I've said before. But in Mark's gospel, if you remember, when Jesus was baptized, he looked up into the heavens, and the heavens were ripped apart and ripped in such a way that they could never be mended. This is the whole idea that God is loose in the world. And when God is loose in the world, you never know what's going to happen. And so God is loose in the world. We've got these heavens that are being ripped apart. But then if you look, when Jesus dies, there is the earthquake that takes place. And also at that time, there is this curtain that's in the temple, the Holy of Holies area, and that curtain is ripped in two when Jesus dies as well. Now, one of the interesting things that we just learned a few years ago from one of the professors out of, was he out of Chicago, David? Do you remember?
I don't know who okay. It was that you're talking about. I kind of think it was Trinity and
it might have been out of Trinity.
Mark
anyway,
Allen Powell.
Mark Allen Powell was the one who was teaching us about this. But he said that he had been doing some research on this temple curtain. And one of the interesting things about this temple curtain is there. It separates the Holy of Holies from the rest of the area. But it's also a tapestry that is designed in such a way that what you see are a picture of the heavens. And so you have this picture of the heavens that is separating the Holy of Holies from all of the people. And this is what is torn into two when Jesus dies. And so once again, you have that ripping that God is loose in the world. And not even will death be able to separate the heavens or separate God from us. And so that's one of those interesting ones.
Even though humanity executed God's Son, God is still in the world. You know, the heavens are still ripped apart so that God and humans are no longer divided as they had been before. Depending on the gospel you're looking at, there are a number of, you know, meteorological things that happen at Jesus' death. I think all of them have darkness covering the land. Some have an earthquake, and it talks about the tearing of the temple. Jesus' death doesn't just happen with a whimper. The whole world, it says, is plunged into darkness, and there's a very dramatic sign that the Son of God has died. And then all seems to return to normal, and they all go about their Sabbath festivities.
And that's where we're going to take a break today. So next week we will come back, and we'll talk about what happens after the Sabbath. So thank you very much for joining us, and we hope you have a blessed week.